Our next presentation is Genetic Services and Literacy in the Latino Communities, a community conversation addressing maternal and child health needs. And this will be presented by Alejandra Gepp, who is an associate director at the National Council of La Raza's Institute for Hispanic Health. She develops, implements, and evaluates public health initiatives that support community-based efforts to reduce health disparities in Latino communities. She is currently leading efforts in diabetes and nutrition. She has her bachelor's in psychology and a master's degree in education and human resource development.
Good afternoon. How is everyone feeling? A little sleepy? First of all, my colleague Vicky Cardosa was the one who led this project. Unfortunately for us, she left the organization, so here I am delivering a presentation. I have been doing genetic education for the last 7 years, and it's one of the areas I'm passionate about. I don't have any disclosures. For those of you who don't know the organization I work for, the National Council of La Raza is the largest civil rights and advocacy organization in the States, advocating for better opportunities for Hispanics American. We conduct applied research, policy analysis, advocacy, and provide capacity building assistance to nearly 300 affiliates. Our affiliates are community-based organizations located all over the country. These are independent organizations who are just affiliated to our network. I specifically work for the Institute for Hispanic Health, whose mission is to improve the health, well-being, and quality of life of Hispanics. We partner with NCLR affiliates, government agency, private funders, and other entities to carry out our work. And we promote quality, science-based, culturally competent, and linguistically appropriate interventions. And I want to direct your attention to the last blur there. Everything we do has two main components. One is science-based, which means that we do our work, we do our literature review, and most of our studies go through an institutional review board. And we take great pride and take a lot of time in developing culturally competent and linguistically appropriate interventions, which are based on formative research. So why Hispanics? You did, Marian did a wonderful job explaining the studies she's done, and she works with what we call mainstream populations. So imagine what it's like for immigrants who haven't been born in these countries when they are faced with a genetic disease and they have to undergo genetic testing. Some of the leading causes of death among Latinos have or may have a genetic component, heart disease, cancer, diabetes, and so forth. To address this need, we were tasked to develop what we called a community conversation model project. The National Human Genome Research Institute of the NIH and its Division of Education and Community Involvement Branch gave us a tiny, tiny grant to develop this project. And so the three of us work in very close collaboration, which is what we typically do. We work and take great pride also in working very closely with our partners. Mary Center was the affiliate implementing this project. It's a federally qualified health center located in Washington, D.C. They do a simply amazing job. And in fact, when the president came on board 4 years ago already, The first organization, the first lady visit, was Mary Center. And why is that? The president and CEO has amazing connections, obviously, but also they are housed in a highly populated Latino community. They've been in existence for a while, and they provide amazing services. Which takes us to this project. We were asked, our goal was to plan, develop, host, and evaluate this project, which focused on maternal and genetic health among Latinos, specifically exploring the issues of genetic testing and services. Our objectives were engage and obtain Latino community input on maternal and child genetic health issues, and hopefully increase decision makers' awareness of the implication of genomics science for the Latino community. Our methodology included focus group discussions with the Latino community. We conducted 3 focus groups. One of the focus groups was with community members who have had some sort of exposure to a genetic health pre-partum. Another one postpartum, meaning if a child was born with a condition, those were the parents who were participating in these focus groups. And we also had a group with no exposure to genetic health services. As importantly, we conducted 3 in-depth interviews with Mary Center healthcare providers. The discussions guides that were used during the focus groups were developed by us, and the recruitment of participants was coordinated with the input of all the partners. What are the results? I mentioned earlier that this was a tiny study. We interviewed 22 participants. They all were older than 18 years of age. We had 4 males, 18 females, and we interviewed 3 healthcare providers. Some of the characteristics of the community members, they were Latinos of Central American origin, most of them, low socioeconomic status, and they were predominantly Spanish-speaking. Who were the physicians? The physicians were the medical director of Mary Center, a pediatrician, and we interview a certified nurse midwife. So let's explore some of the results. Some of the similarities that we saw across all the group participants, you can see it there on the screen. Across the board, there is not understanding on about the genetic health concepts. They're not having information resources, not having enough social support, not knowing what to do with this result, which was more or less what Marian was referring to when in her presentation. When we ask about what knowledge do you have about genetic health, genetic was related to negative aspects of health. There are myths and misconceptions about having a child being born with a genetic disease, and that translates into a negative thing. Genetics often is related to genetic testing. And when parents were asked, where would you go for genetic testing, they would go to a place like Mary Center, but they would not know where else to go. In terms of attitudes around genetic health services, there is fear that the genetic testing may be invasive. There is fear about receiving negative results and not knowing what to do with them. Some of them feel dissatisfied, confused, worried about genetic health information received. And the physician was the primary source of information when, in those cases when the child was diagnosed with a genetic disease. In terms of acceptance of genetic health services, they prefer less invasive testing procedures, likely to carry a full-term pregnancy regardless of test results. Even in those cases when the mom knew she was going to have a child with a genetic condition, those mothers reported that they would have the child regardless. What were some of the differences between the groups? There is a aware of need for genetic testing between prepartum, confused about genetic concepts. Those who receive genetic testing postpartum reported that they were more knowledgeable, but unable to clearly articulate concepts. That means they didn't know what to do with what the doctor was telling them about. And they were certainly uncertain about having undergone genetic testing during pregnancy. Those who had not received any, the group that did not have any genetic health service exposure, that means prepartum or postpartum, there was very little to no knowledge about genetic health or services. They expressed minimal exposure to genetic health services and related genetic health to chronic diseases, which is very good. They did know that genetics may play a role in the development of a chronic disease. So after we conducted the focus group discussions, we went and interviewed the healthcare providers. They expressed the following. When we were asked how would we approach community members to deliver this kind of information, they said that poverty is a huge barrier, lack of access to general health care, low educational level, and they certainly mentioned language barrier. As importantly, they mentioned that healthcare providers do not have resources to adequately educate patients. They don't have the time, they don't have the educational skills, and they do not have educational materials that are culturally competent and linguistically appropriate. Also, they reported that patients cannot access existing educational information. And when we asked about whether they thought that patients were aware of family health history, the answer was not. However, there is a lot of hope, and these healthcare providers did make some recommendations, and they suggested that this is a great time, and this is a new opportunity to start working on some of these issues to increase the community genomic literacy. Increasing some of the blurs you have there have to do with increasing healthcare providers. Genomic literacy, I'm not certain, you know, if schools around the country are bringing or teaching their students about this. If they aren't, they should. They also recommended that one-on-one sessions with doctors to discuss educational materials is the best way to talk with patients. Building the rapport with patients and addressing their concern is essential. As importantly, encouraging patients to share information with family members is highly desirable. Another opportunity to increase the community genomic literacy included conducting outreach activities In Washington, D.C., where this where Mary Center is located, throughout the years, except in winter, throughout the year, rather, they conduct tons of health fairs where the community goes and have and dance and receive all kind of information, and it's a nice event. So these providers recommended that we should use that kind of venue to distribute basic information to the community. And of course, they mentioned that it should be essential to establish culturally competent and linguistically appropriate support for these parents. So in a nutshell, in terms of recommendations, test the integration of family health messages into maternal and child genetic health intervention is a must. Increase the number of bilingual genetic counselors nationwide. And I can tell you that a few years back when I just had started doing genetic education, I wanted to bring a genetic counselor to one of the training sessions I was facilitating. Back then, there were only four fully bilingual counselors. And at the end, we couldn't bring any of them. We ended up bringing a fabulous Puerto Rican doctor who was working for NIH, who'd done extensive research in the area of Alzheimer's, and she felt confident enough to come and deliver a small segment on what genetic is and what chromosomes do and so forth. But it's a huge issue. Also, it will be so important to establish a comprehensive, culturally competent, and linguistically appropriate genetic health counseling center. Super important is to provide training to healthcare professionals so that they can respond to someone's questions. For all of you who gone to the doctor, sometimes you go, I have a child, and you know, sometimes I try to write my questions down, and sometimes I don't. And my doctor is in a rush to get me out of there within 10 minutes after I wait 45. And then she gets upset because I tell her that she's late. Anyway, so further recommendation, which are essential to what we are trying to do here. Without allocating enough resources to fund these initiatives, we are going nowhere. I mentioned at the beginning of my presentation that I started doing genetic education over 7 years ago, and what I can tell you is that the funding my organization has received has been very, very, very little. Budgetary cuts have affected budgets of federal agencies across the board, and it has felt big time in the genetic arena. When it's time to do budget cut, the first thing they do is to cut any funding for genetic education. This goes back to my second blurb there. Funding community projects that address maternal and child genetic health is essential. The NCLR develops culturally competent programs, and throughout the years we have tried to include the genetic component as part of other chronic disease programs, such as diabetes, cardiovascular disease, cancer, and so forth. And there is a ton of interest. The community really wants to know. many Latinos, for example, don't know that knowing your family health history is super important for the care of your own health. So funding community project is a must. Educational materials, and I want to be careful how I say this. It's oftentimes I receive calls from mainstream organizations saying, well, we have this document in English, and we want to reach out to the Spanish-speaking community, and therefore, I want your help to translate. Two things. The fact that I speak and write Spanish as a first language, it doesn't mean I'm a translator. But yes, I do a good job writing. But the internal quality control we have is that when our materials are written in Spanish, they are sent out to a professional editor. So in this point also I want to say that the Latino community here in the States is over 50 million people. And about 33% of them are low literacy level, low income level, and are new immigrants. So what I would say today is this. I speak English reasonably well. I consider myself a highly educated person. I can read, and I can speak English. So I don't need to read materials in Spanish, because I can read them in English. So the focus should always be know the population you are trying to reach. And oftentimes, the population who needs these materials in Spanish are the low educated and the low literacy people living here in the States. So if you are producing a document that it has 50 pages, no way Jose, someone who is low literacy, is going to read it. In fact, most of the focus group discussions we have conducted suggest that people like images, know a lot of writing. And why is that? Because they have problems reading. Genetics is no easy to understand. It's complex. There are so many terms that one goes, what? What is she trying to tell me? So keep that in mind. If you have any, want to reach out to Latinos, you or someone else, start by conducting focus group discussions, in-depth interviews. It doesn't have to be in a large scale, but that will give you the guidelines about what that population knows about it. The other thing that I would like to say about Latinos in this country, we are very diverse. There are four major groups, Puerto Ricans, Mexicanos, Mexican-Americans, people from South America, and people from Cuba. And they all have differences. And when I give these presentations, people ask me, but how do you reach out to all of them? And I always say the same. Get to know your target community. So there are, when we develop our materials, no, we don't develop materials to every specific group. But when we do our analysis from the focus group discussions, we look for similarities. And most of our work is done through our community-based organizations, specifically community health workers, who can adapt information to the different groups in the country. Ideally, with these recommendations, we would like to convene different representatives from Latino-serving and mainstream organizations. We would like to disseminate project results widely. engage policymakers and ensure health services are available and accessible. And there is my contact information. Thank you very much.
Reality is that there are, this genetic medicine is still evolving. And there are not a lot of answers for some of the diseases. Some rare diseases are more, there is more research on it than others, but I can only imagine what it's like to have a child with a rare disease. I do not want you to leave today, though, without mentioning that there is a wonderful organization which I work in partnership with for the last 7 years, and it's Natasha's organization, Genetic Alliance, has done, in my opinion, an amazing job bringing in different consumers, advocating effectively on behalf of parents who have children born with a genetic disability. They have worked very closely with the Department of Health, with NIH. So if you know of someone who has a child with a condition, I would highly recommend to go to the website and see what they have. And if they don't have it, feel free to call. They are the most open and wonderful staff. They have amazing leadership. Sharon Kelly has been at the head of the organization for how many years, Jay?
Ten years.
And she has two kids of her own, born with a genetic condition. And she completely understands. So she's been able to bring together all the different groups on parents who has formed with little groups and coalitions. And they have advocated and helped other families.
I promise I didn't pay Alejandra to say that. Are there any other questions or comments about either presentations that we had today? I think they were both very good and very informative. I think even though the race around genetic technology just keeps getting faster and faster and faster, it sometimes seems like we're in a hamster's wheel when it comes to education and really providing the true understanding for parents who are actually going through these things. So I think both these presentations highlighted that very nicely. Did you have?
I have a quick question and a more complicated question. The quick question
you guys
is,
can
are,
both
the,
sit
are your
here.
Slides going to be available or can we make copies of those?
I don't know how that works. I can't remember how that works through APHA, but they will. Right, so you should be able to download them.
The second part of the question is that I am looking for specific recommendations, and I think you both had them, and that's why I'd like a copy of the slides, that might be able to be expanded to look at genetic services within a state MCH program, mm-hmm. and that's what I'm interested in, is looking at what can state MCH programs do to help, and to help both providers and the family get the information and the services that they need. So if you had any more thoughts on that from your research, from your experiences,
I can say that Genetic Alliance and Theory, I guess I should have introduced myself at the beginning. I'm sorry. I am the Vice President of Strategic Development at Genetic Alliance, and I oversee our maternal and child health activities. And so through that, we have worked with different groups such as AMCHIP, Family to Family, Family Voices, those groups that have worked more closely with Title V programs and the state and the CH programs, and really seeing how do we introduce genetics into that conversation. I think the hard thing is, what we always say is that these are the funds that are getting cut, and it's hard to think about, it's hard, but we have to start thinking about how do we introduce new resources for this new age of genetics in a time when things that we always thought were stable that would always be paid for and covered in maternal and child health are really threatened. So how do we have that conversation?
Just following up on that, one thing about all the policies that I mentioned is to think about what can fit with current institutional structure that already exists.
Right.
so that it doesn't cost that much to bring something new in, and it's also already there, so it can happen more quickly. So I don't know what the answer is, but is there something that can be introduced into an existing structure that could just add some genomics education or connections like that in the system, or that's already there?
There's actually a session tomorrow. I really should know more information about it, but Genetic Alliance did a project with community health centers around family health history, and all these centers had very different target groups. One was really geared towards people who are homeless. There are others that, and there are six projects across the country, and that data, the preliminary data from that, will be presented tomorrow. So I think that's something that could be really interesting in trying to see, how do you take these concepts that we've talked about here, whether it's in a more research setting or something very specific, and what does that look like in an actual, actually implemented at the state or community level.
All done by people.
there aren't a whole lot of people being trained in Mexico who can come work in New York right now.
That's something that I'd like to expand a little bit on in terms of the workforce who will be delivering this type of support, education, counseling, whichever you want to say. And, you know, Genetic Alliance is very much in that discussion in terms of, you know, and I'm not saying you have to choose one or the other, but is kind of priority number one, getting more people into genetic counseling programs and really creating a larger, more diverse, more potentially impactful genetic counseling community? Is it really ramping up something that's more of a hybrid between nursing and genetic counseling? Is it, you know, community health workers? And this is an issue that isn't unique to genetics, but I think is particularly important at this point in time, looking at how genetics is really being integrated into healthcare throughout, particularly from a technology perspective, maybe not necessarily in a conversation, true literacy perspective. But I don't know if there's more thought about that, because that's something that both of you raised to a certain extent in terms of who should be that person or that group, really making that connection between the information and the parents and families that need it. So I think that would be very interesting to hear from.
If you ask me, I will tell you straightforward that we have worked extensively through community support. And in fact, when I first came to NPR, my first project wasn't the genetic education training and implementing community sessions on the importance of knowing common topics. People are not aware, some people, I'm not aware that, I mentioned this earlier, that the genetic that family health disorder does play a big role. And community health workers, for those of you who haven't worked with them, are lay people who are at the heart of the community, who live, work, whose kids go to schools with community members. And are trained on a specific area. In our case, we train them to raise awareness about the importance of mental health. Unfortunately, we couldn't continue with the program because of lack of funding. But the interest was huge. So if you are designing some programs, I would hire from the Center Start with community members who can be really good trained to refer those community members to a genetic counselor, and who can facilitate that process, who can even answer some questions. I can, you know, hear some of them saying, oh, el doctor no sabe nada, the doctor doesn't know a thing. And it's not that the doctor doesn't know anything. In some cases, it may be true, but in most cases, it's because the doctor really doesn't have the information. I'm not an MD. I didn't go to medical school, so I really don't have a lot of knowledge how, you know, students are trained. But clearly, there is a gap. Students are not being trained in most cases on even the importance of public health. What we do is that. So when it takes to it comes to genetic education, we are far removed from that. So what do we do in the meantime? Which is what I'm constantly asking myself. How do I go about this with the little resources? And community health workers for us have worked really well. They have to be integrated into a system that one mentioned earlier, Natasha specifically, mentioned the Affordable Care Act. There is potentially a lot of money to do prevention, and specifically there are provisions to work with promotional centers. The patient-centered medical home is a reality here. If these premature understandings are integrated into the patient's medical home, especially internally qualified doctors, it's going to be amazing. We are testing an initiative in Chicago, integrating promoter excellence and electronic records into the model, and we'll see how what the results are. It's been challenging, to say the least, but at least the initiative is there, and we'll see the results. So next year we should.
Can I just, the patient sent to medical home, how does the genetics fit in with that?
What I'm saying is that community health workers can be a viable venue to introduce genetic education. And that has to be, and they have to be integrated into a more holistic system in which nurses and doctors and lay people and the patient work all together.
Do we have any other comments, questions for the group? No? Well, great. I think our speakers have deserved one round of applause. Thank you very much. And I'm sure they'll be here if you have more one-on-one questions that you'd like. Great.